Hey, kids, this is Mark Arm from Mudhoney.
This is Nicole Alvarez from the world-famous K-Rock.
Hey, I'm James Joseph from James and the Cold Gun.
Hey, I'm Zozier.
Hey, this is Jeremy Toback from the band Brad.
Hello, this is David Abrazis.
This is Josh Evans.
This is Charles Peterson.
And this is the State of Love and Trust.
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 A Pearl Jam podcast.
Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. Feed the algorithm.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The State of Love and Trust. It's a Pearl Jam podcast, and I'm one of your two hosts, Jason Carapesi, and alongside me, as always, is...
Paul Guillieri.
Paul, here we are, episode 202. We've got a great guest coming up, but I have to make sure everybody, if you're watching, subscribe, like the episode. That really helps other Pearl Jam fans and music fans find the show. And Paul, if they are listening only, what should they do?
Well, as always, they should feed that algorithm by subscribing on your preferred podcast platform of choice.
And you know what, Paul?
The algorithm.
You've got to feed the algorithm.
Got to feed
100%.
You know, it's been raining so much in California, Jason. I almost feel like the more they feed, it's like a rain dance now. It's like... I don't understand. It will not stop. I'm worried that my Giants and Padres game is going to get rained out on Sunday.
Oh, you going?
Can't seem to win. Yeah, I got tickets to the game.
Oh, fun.
I've been coaching my kids little league and softball teams too. Right. And every weekend, like, it won't rain the whole week. And then the weekend hits. It's like,
boom.
Yeah. So, well, I guess.
Yeah. It's raining. We taped this a little bit before the drop date, so we're talking about something that already happened, but it's going to be raining this weekend here in Southern California.
It's just ridiculous. Maybe they should feed the algorithm to get it to stop raining for a little bit.
There you go.
Either way, just keep feeding it.
If you are interested in more stuff from us, by the way, there is Patreon, like we say. We do also sell shirts that have some pretty groovy designs. That we use to help fund the show. And on the Patreon, we also do monthly giveaways. Last month, it was the Dark Matter single. This month, there it is.
That's what it was. It's
Thank
beautiful.
You, Paul. This month, it's a copy of the entire record, Paul, of Dark Matter.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Oh, baby. So, just saying. That's something beyond all the other cool content we put out over there at the Patreon. Monthly giveaway, Dark Matter on vinyl for you. Look at that. Boom. Just put it in your back pocket. Think about it. If not, no big deal. You're here right now. Let's talk music, man. Right?
Yep.
So there's a gentleman who's been talking the music and talking with musicians for a number of years now. He is a bit of a prodigy, but he's been doing this since, you know, I was still taking SATs. We're all the same age, so we were taking SATs.
he's been living the dream for a while now.
Yeah. Well, he's a DJ, he's an interviewer, and if you're a Pearl Jam fan, you've probably listened to him interview Jeff and Stone and Mike over the years. Mm-hmm. It's Kyle Meredith, and he's coming up next. All right, he's a nationally syndicated radio host for two decades, music director over at WFPK in Louisville, Kentucky, where he's spinning tunes from all over the map each night. He's also had his work published in many outlets you've no doubt read, like Consequence of Sound, Rolling Stone, Billboard, Spin, NME, Pitchfork, and he has a tri-weekly interview podcast, Kyle Meredith With, which you can listen to on the usual podcast platforms, as well as on his YouTube channel. Holy Jesus, what a CV. It's Kyle Meredith.
Somebody read my bio. Look at that.
Oh my God.
Happy to be here. Thanks, guys.
Well, we're stoked to have you here.
Kyle's just happy we're literate is what this comes down to.
We've passed the first test, Paul.
Oh, thanks. I got this motto in my job, like, you only have to be a little bit better than most people to be like world's better. So you just only have to try a little bit. So
I figure if I get enough of the small details right, they'll build accumulate and we'll come off as passable. I have to, before we get going here, congratulate you on 900 episodes.
Wow.
Thank you. In fact, I think it's more than 900. That's just where the empty spot I could find in the schedule to say that one works. But yeah, that's 900 episodes of that. We've been doing the series with Consequence since 2018. Of course, I've been doing interviews before that, so I think it's well in the thousands, of interviews. But yeah, it's getting up there, and really proud of the work I get to do with it. I guess we're on the race to 1,000 now. Whatever that means. So
I don't. It means you are a well-established, savvy veteran of the art form, my friend.
You just stick around, right? You just stick around, and suddenly, you get to call yourself a veteran. Okay,
sure. Why not?
It's like when you hit the age milestone. Mm-hmm. I have a buddy of mine, and they threw this massive, lavish bar mitzvah party for his son. And his son was like, "Dad, like this, you know, this there's like, you know, there's so much significance here. You know, it's crossing a threshold, milestone, in my life." And his dad was joking with him. He goes, "You know, it's pretty interesting that we go through all these hoops and ladders here to celebrate the fact that, you know, for 13 years we managed to not kill you. Is really what it comes down to." that's what every birthday is. You know, it's a celebration of you not being dead. Basically, is what it is.
I got. So the, when you I hit, got, I was gonna say,
when,
I guess
when you hit 1,000, when you hit 1,000, you got to throw a birthday party for yourself and say, "This is in celebration of me not getting canceled." How about that?
I think so. I think I'm going to do something. I feel like I should do something for 1,000. It's much easier to remember. I was going to say, because I did make it to the birthdays that I forget what age I'm at. And my wife was really savvy because I turned 42 last year. And she says, "That's your Douglas Adams birthday." If anybody's familiar with Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the answer to life is 42. So I was like, I could remember that. I have no, Jack until I get to 50 number. Now, I have nothing else. You know, I'm lost.
Right.
It's all downhill. That's
Well, I'm going to join you.
You were 1981?
1981, right?
That's me too. Quick I'm math. 1981 as well. Yeah. Well,
I'm 1982. Like, what does that mean? I don't know.
You're 1982. I don't know.
Yeah.
You're a degree off Kevin Bacon, you know.
Anywho,
we know each other.
Anywho,
I gotta say, from where I'm sitting, you've got a very interesting career and job and platform that I aspire to have one day. I think where, you know, respect, reverence, that kind of thing, being able to ask the people who make the music that we all love and the TV shows and the movies, the questions that you would want to ask. And I think, we're just privileged to have you here, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
No, I am. I'm really excited to be here. As anyone, you know, will do this, will say, I come into this feeling uncomfortable because I didn't have anything. I didn't have questions prepared.
Oh, yeah. So you're used to.
Which is what I do all the time. But seriously, I love the work you all do. And obviously, you know, when it comes to nerding out about our all-time favorite band, you know, State of Love and Trust podcast, first place I would kind of turn when I get those moments. I just want to throw it back at you guys. I mean,
is over. That's all we need.
You do excellent work.
Oh, stop it. Go on. Stop it.
We're gonna take that recording of you saying it and just loop it.
I'm told that Instagram reels are the only thing that Instagram cares about. So we'll just make that the reel for the week and just loop it.
Yeah.
We appreciate the kind words though.
Yeah, seriously.
Absolutely.
Well, you mentioned it. Our favorite band, Pearl Jam. We are just days away from a new album. We've gotten a couple of tastes so far. I should warn you that Paul has only had one taste. He refuses to hear Running and will wait CD. You heard it.
I heard it. I was, you know, Kyle, there's a part of me that just, I relished the days of old where I would just rip open the cellophane and pop that sucker in and listen to it from beginning to front, mm-hmm. you know, from, I'm sorry, from beginning to end, front to back, just unencumbered, first time. And I feel like I've been robbed of that experience recently. So I was committed to trying to do that here.
What happened?
And then you happened.
I didn't give you the song.
You reminded me of my.
I said it was out, and I gave you my. I asked you, do you want to hear my impression? And you said okay. So I told you what I thought
I'm
of
saying
it.
For Dark Matter, I had once you listen to one, it's like, well, all right, you've already heard one. We're gonna talk about Pearl Jam's music. I'm gonna be the co-host who hasn't heard anything. So it's
like, well, that could be a fun dynamic.
Yeah,
Paul, what do you think? I don't know.
We'll explain it to you. I'll explain the album to you. It's gonna be very visual.
Charades.
Riveting.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Pearl Jam, let's go backwards. Let's go backwards in the time machine. We are all basically the same age here, so I'm always curious. What are the earliest memories of music and what bands, albums, songs kind of made you feel something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my earliest memory of music was Cyndi Lauper. I guess it was probably Girls Want to Have Fun.
Of course.
Little kid in the 80s. And I think it was probably just a song on the radio. But that's the first time I kind of remember connecting to a song. And it's still one of the catchiest songs, I think, of all time. And Prince's Purple Rain coming out around that time was played a lot around our house. I grew up in the country of Kentucky. So it was a lot of what I call river rock. You know, those... You know, Bob Seger and Mellencamp, the bands that would be blasting they were crushing Bud cans in
the Lacker Rock, Chevy commercials.
Yeah, right. CCR, a lot of CCR.
Little Bob Seger on a lonely, lonesome highway.
Oh, I still love
East of Omaha.
Little Night Moves. Come on now.
It's great.
It's the best.
So good.
Yeah. And then we got the CD player. I remember getting that. And the last cassette I bought was also the first CD that I bought, which was Dookie from Green Day.
Oh,
nice.
I got the cassette, and then Christmas came and I got the CD with my with my money because we got the CD player and Shaq Fu to Return from Shaquille O'Neal was the second CD. So
Kyle, can I tell you, that's so weird that you say that. I don't mean to like shine the spotlight back over here, but the fact that you just said Green Day Dookie is one of your first CDs or first CD and then a Shaquille O'Neal CD.
Yeah.
Shaq Diesel was one of my first CDs along with Green Day Dookie, Aerosmith Get a Grip, Pearl Jam 10, and what the hell was it? Ace of Base.
I still got my original Ace of Base CD. Let's see if I tilt it.
All that she wants is my baby.
Atlanta. Yeah. Look at that.
Oh, look at those.
The Wall of Fun.
Yeah. So that's all the CDs come in. But I still have a lot of those. A lot of my the original ones are still back there. So. But yeah, so those were the first kind of big musical moments, and growing up in the country at that time, I mean, outside of MTV, we had Top 40 Radio. So, you know, at that time it was equal MC Hammer and Garth Brooks. And it wasn't, and then one day in eighth grade, I think it was eighth grade, a friend of mine, we were sitting on the bus and she was behind me. I didn't realize how cool she was till I got older. And I thought she was the coolest person I could have known at this point in time. Her name is Kim. And she puts headphones and says, right before she puts them on, she goes, "You have to hear this." And it was Spoon Man from Soundgarden.
Yeah.
Nice. Super unknown.
And that changed my world. Like, I sort of knew alt rock, but that was the one where I went, oh, this is the new me. You know, she played, we listened to REM a little bit after that. I think it was Monster album, Bang and Blame, that kind of stuff that was on at the time.
You immediately went out and bought some Doc Martens.
I don't know. But that's sort of how I came into this world.
Nice. Well, one of my favorite live albums is Dave Matthews Live at Red Rocks 95. Mm-hmm. And I know that one of your earliest gigs was actually doing some marketing for Dave Matthews. So let's cross a bridge here. Kyle, how did you get from listening to Spoon Man with Kim at the back of the bus to finding yourself doing that with Dave Matthews?
Yeah.
Big jump.
Early internet, like you've seen, I'm sure you've seen Almost Famous.
Yes.
Huh?
Movie Almost Famous. There's the part where when he's young and he's on the phone with Rolling Stone, and of course they don't know how young he is, And he almost gives himself away when his mom picks up the phone. And you know, it sort of gets out of it. So that's sort of how I also got into the business. It was early internet in the 90s, 97 or 8, I guess it might have been 98. I'm already obsessed on, you know, I'd go to this Ultimate Ban List was the website around that time. And liveconcerts.com was had the real time player. And somehow I stumbled upon a website called High Frequency, and they were a marketing company. They eventually got bought out by DreamWorks and that when their music imprint. But at the time they were just getting hired to do field marketing for, you know, bands. And I emailed them and said, I want to do this too. And they said, are you in college? And I said, yeah. They called me and they asked me that question after I did the email thing and all that. And like, let's do the phone interview. And they said, you know, so you're in college. And I was like, yeah. I go to University of Louisville. And they said, oh, how many hours are you taking? I did not know what that meant.
What does that question mean?
And I went, oh, I don't even remember. And there was just this long pause. And they're like, yeah, you know, I guess life's busy. It's just some bullshit thing. I was like, what the hell? And anyway, so they gave me the job. And the very first or second record, I forget which comes first, was Dave and Tim live at Luther College.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Elliot Smith's XO. And so I did. I worked those records. And when the artists came to town, I'd get to go and say hi and kind of meet them. And most of that job was going around and, you know, making sure that the CD stores had in-store copies and the posters were hung up and that stuff. Okay. So those were my first records. And I worked some cool records and I worked some weird pop records. And it did, but it got me in the door here in town. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as the music community and the business side of it. And I started learning about that. I was playing in a band around the time. So I kind of had that, you know, that learning that world as well. And that eventually led to radio.
So let's talk about that transition then, because you going from marketing to, you know, being a director of music and being on air, as you have been at multiple stations in the Louisville area. How does that even happen? How do you make that leap?
Yeah, well, so I was in college for I was in college for like half a second. And while I was there though, I ended up in the internship program. And it's, I think, thanks to it's Pearl Jam that gets me in the door here, because I got in the internship program, but I didn't have an internship set up. And I sort of just got let go from a factory job that I was doing part-time. And I'm out in the car and the alternative station here in town, LRS, is on. And I heard the DJ. And it was just by luck, because a lot of times, even back in 2000, the DJs were already voice tracked. They weren't live. You know, they'd record their show and get out. By pure chance, this jock was actually in the studio when I called. And he picks up and we talk for a second. And I say, you know what you guys need? Your competitor has mandatory Metallica and, you know, hour long Metallica.
Yeah,
yeah. You guys need a Pearl Jam show called Spread the Jam. And he laughed and we got to talk about it. He was a Pearl Jam fan too. Not a huge one like I was, but he was a fan. And he found out I was, in the internship program and he invited me up to the station. And that's what I did. So I started as an intern. I did a local music show and then I got hired and sort of just worked my way through that. And by complete attrition, I ended up being the program director before I was 21. And I was the youngest program director in the country at that time. And so that's sort of started the radio career. Hold on.
Okay, by attrition. So people were just leaving and like you were the last man standing. Like someone's
leaving or getting fired or moving and just whatever it was. It was kind of a station in transition around that time.
And what station was this again? LRS?
WLRS. Yeah. Okay. LRS. So that's it had been an alternative station on a different frequency through the late 90s, and then it went to the frequency I was on and staff was a changeover, but it was all sort of a temporary thing, people coming in from out. So just they left, and I would, every time somebody would leave, I was the person who would just always be there. Like I lived there. I was, even in, during my internship, I needed 40 hours for the week. I would do 60 hours or 40 hours for the semester. I would do 60 hours a week. Yeah. Kind of a thing.
Wow.
So, you know, somebody would leave and like, yeah, I know how to do that.
So Kyle, you decided to stop spreading the jam in 2003. And that's when you moved into artist promotions. Is it a coincidence, or are you trying to tell us something about how you really feel about Riot Act?
How do I feel about Riot? I don't hate Riot Act.
Just purely coincidental that you
moved. No. I remember.
He heard Ed badmouthing President Bush in Uniondale. He was like, that's enough for me. I've had it.
Oh, man. I loved Bush League when it came out. Yeah, because, you know, it's like weird Pearl Jam. And I'll usually nudge the guys every time, you know, we'll do an interview to like, don't forget your weird side, you know, don't forget about Bugs. Don't forget about Color Red or Red Spot, you know, whatever. Bush League was great. I remember sitting on some steps living in the house I was with, and it was in a band called Doubt in the Obvious at the time. We were kind of a touring band, and that had just come out, and Binaural was a little shaky, I think, for a few of us. And I do love Binaural now quite a bit more than I think that I did then. But Riot Act came out, and I think there was some cocked eyebrows, but I remember sitting down and, you know, just some of those songs. Yeah, I got nothing but love for that album. I don't think it's their strongest, but it definitely didn't make me leave the business. So,
but you did move into artist promotions. Like, how did that... You marketing, on air, program director, and then I don't want to say it's reverse coursing, but it's definitely a change of lanes to go into promotions. Did you want to, or is that another attrition moment?
That's an attrition thing. So, and I'm telling you, it really does always come back to Pearl Jam. The company got bought out, and they kept me, which is surprising, but they had this consultant who is now puppeteering the station from far away. And excuse me, he had never even been to town. And I was a young punk kid reading Adbusters. And, you know, I was breaking some rules that I wasn't supposed to break. And one of those was he had this set playlist, and I wanted to play stuff that, you know, I thought the station should play. I knew the market. I mean, and even when I look back, you know, because, you know, you some stuff like, you'll never get along without me. And then everybody gets along without you. But I look back, and that's one of the things like, no, I still knew that station better. And now I can see that I knew it better because the station ended up eventually crashing and having to reset. But one day I decided to do the evolution into regular rotation because it wasn't. And I got a call because what was I thinking? Well, they already had the technology. You know, there's a computer listening to radio stations, and it tracks what songs are playing. So he was, you know, might have been, you know, 1,000 miles away, but he calls me. He's like, "The hell are you doing? Why are you playing? That's not in the playlist." And then I did it a couple more times, and he said, "You don't work here anymore." So, and I bounced around for a few other stations, but yeah, there was a record label in town called Label X, and they were taking some well-established local bands as an opportunity to let's try to take them to the national level. And the guy who ran the record label produced one of my band's records. His name's Todd Smith. He also produced like Days of the New, you know, when they were.
Oh, old Travis Meeks.
Yeah. Travis. Yeah. Yeah. He produced those records. Especially the green one, the second one, that was his biggest one. So he had produced us, so we knew each other, and he says, "Well, I got this label, and I could use someone to help me get these bands on the radio." And we were a small crew, so I was the radio guy, but I was also their day-to-day manager. And I took them on tour, and I took them to all the stations, and I did that for a handful of years in between radio gigs.
So then, how did you, or I guess to say, what made you then get back into the on-air thing? Because you had that weekly feed show, and you're back. It's what, 2008 or something like that.
Yeah.
And how does that happen?
Yeah, for a while I was a little bit put off. You know, the dream, like I had made it to the top. I had my dream job before I was 21. It was my dream job. I dreamt about radio, you know, and for since I was young. So then it was like, what the hell do you do now? And so I was, I had a bad taste in my mouth, and but eventually that itch kind of came back. I took the opportunity to start a blog in 07 or 08. And that was the first time where I said, I'm going to interview people. And it wasn't that I said, I thought I was going to be an interviewer. It's just like, this is something I can do. And so I called up some industry friends who connected me to Ben Lee, and he was the first interview I did. And, there's a couple other indie bands. I can't remember right now, but Kings of Leon ended up being one of the first like bigger ones. Bela Fleck was one of them. I knew Bela Fleck, the banjoist and, banjoist.
I think so.
I like banjoist. So yeah, that was, I did the Kings of Leon interview, and then a friend, I knew the people that worked at WFBK because I was promoting these bands to them. And so I kind of called up one day. First I was in Boulder, Colorado, and I was looking at the Flatirons, and I was across the table from a friend of mine, a musician, Bridget Kalin. And I said, I've been doing these interviews and I think I got the itch to be in radio again. And she said, well, you know, FPK right here in Louisville, they actually just got rid of their night host. So maybe you should call. And I did. I called right away. And she said, well, I've already filled it, but why don't you come in and maybe you can be a fill-in. And so I came in and I said, cool, I'd love to fill in. I've also got some show ideas for a specialty show. And I think I pitched her like four or five ideas, and she liked the weekly feed. And I said, I also had these interviews, and I just did this Kings of Leon interview, and would you want to air it? So that's sort of how that kind of went from bedroom onto the air. The weekly feed, I then, that was the whole, the concept, because it was around the time still of the blog era. And, but so the blogs were getting the music so much quicker than radio stations. And I said, I can fix that for you. So I built the show as a way to take what was debuting on these blogs and put it right on the air. And so I was the very first person in the country to play Mumford & Sons. I was the first person in the country to play Higham.
Wow.
The band Fun.
L.A. band. Yeah.
Lumineers. Because no other station... just they weren't figuring this out, you know, so it was such an easy thing. So I did the weekly feed. I self-syndicated it to 100 stations.
How do you self-syndicate?
Because I'd been working these stations on the label side. I knew everybody in the formats. I knew their budgets and I knew what they didn't have.
Savvy son of a bitch, Kyle.
And so I was able to call all of them up. And over in about 2 years, we had about 100 stations on the show. And I did that for 6 years until it just felt irrelevant. The show was doing fine. I didn't lose any didn't lose any stations or anything like that. It was making okay money. But radio and blogs is sort of going away, and radio had caught up by that point. So it was just a new music show, and there was like new music shows everywhere. So that's so I said. I had the interview portion in the middle, and I said, well, what if I just get rid of everything else and keep the interview portion? And for a little bit, there was a little show called The Speed of Sound that I tried it out on, and until eventually I just made it this, Kyle Meredith, what would have become the Kyle Meredith with podcast.
Tell me, Kyle, when you start thinking about the craft of what you do, Desi Lydek said something to you not too long ago about how when you love a craft, you really have to kind of like get used to being bad at it, get used to sucking at it until you build that muscle. And then eventually through that process, you become proficient at it. You get better at it. Did you feel that way when you were on radio or as somebody who's interviewing artists?
Yeah. And especially like, so in that little pocket between the post weekly feed show that was called The Speed of Sound and what would become this podcast, when I said I was going to do the interviewing, I didn't call anybody. I didn't alert my syndicated stations. And I had FPK, WFPK. And what I did was I said, okay, now that I've decided I'm going to do interviews, now that I've decided that I'm going to really make a run at this specific, this lane, I have to get better at it. And I have to find my voice. And so what I did was I did 8 interviews a week for a year.
Wow. Holy moly.
Oh man.
And that was it.
I thought you just kept practicing WFPK. WFPK.
Who is your pig vomit?
I'm sure I had those through the years. Yeah. But yeah,
8 interviews. Wow. 8 interviews a
week. So I would do 8. And so one side of it was to get better. And the other side of it was to then have this resume that I could take to whoever, you know, when that time came and say, this is what I can do. And that's, I knew the guys at Consequence, which was then Consequence of Sound. I knew them peripherally. One of them had been on my show through a mutual friend. And they were kind of the first person I thought of. And I called up Michael Rothman and Alex Young and said, listen, I've got these interviews. WFPK owns them. So that's taken care of. Like, sort of the money's taken care of. Mm. I will give them to you for free. You just have to post them. But you have to post everything that I give you. And they said, I mean, that's it's enough. You don't turn down. Here's free content for the website, right?
Yeah.
They said, yes. Can you do less, though?
We love you so much. Do less of it.
Do less. And I said, okay. And so we kind of landed. That's how it landed at that 3 a week, which was my family appreciated because, you know,
sure.
I am actually a little bit. Yeah. A little bit. So, yeah, that's it was. Yeah, I just it was developing. It was developing that muscle. It was knowing, you know, listening to every one of them and hearing what was bad, learning to turn myself off. You know, I'd post them and people would be like, dude, shut up. And what I realized was they're here to hear their favorite artist, obviously. And that's great. Like, that wasn't a mystery to me. I knew that. But it was even little things like, you know, I have a few basic rules of interviewing. The first one is don't waste anyone's time. Like, come prepared. Well said. You know? The second one,
you can tell us off air how much of yours we wasted. not on air.
The second one, I say, ask the question and then be quiet. And it's really hard for some people. Like, make sure the question has a question mark. You know,
oh, yeah.
Like, that was huge. A big thing.
I love your record. Thanks.
Right.
What's the question?
Don't ask a question that can be answered with a yes or no if you don't have to. Because if it can be answered with a yes or no, they will answer it with a yes or no. And 100%. Then you've got nowhere to go with that. There's no follow-up. And all the great stuff is in the follow-up question. And that's it. I just learned to, that's like Jay Maskus was my favorite learning tool around that time. Because Jay Maskus infamously is a very nice guy, but a very difficult interview. He does not talk. He's very quiet and he gives very short answers. But what I learned is if I just don't talk after I ask the question, if I'm okay with the silence for a second, he'll keep talking. And that goes with everybody. If you allow people to talk, they'll keep talking, you know, until that is all the way. So, you know, even, you know, the way people, if you're in a regular conversation, you'll be like, oh yeah. Like, I cut that stuff out and everything. So I just started finding those basic rules. And after a while, people stopped leaving bad comments on my YouTubes. So,
yeah, that's key, is to avoid the negative. Sometimes you're not going to be able to avoid them altogether, but
sure.
Minimize them, I think, is the idea, right?
It's also realizing that... there's always going to be somebody out there who's unhappy that you're talking to their favorite person. Like, who the fuck are you? You know?
Right.
That's fine. I can take that.
You know, Desi said something else in that interview that you had with her, and she was delightful, by the way, as she has been for, what, 9 years on The Daily Show. But she said that she believes that comedy can be a way for people to find political compromise, or at least get them to kind of have civil conversations about these kinds of things. Do you think that music is similar?
Yeah, well, so you have the right-wing people who like Pearl Jam, right?
We have talked to some of them, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's part of the answer right there. I mean, that's proof, I guess, is what I should say. Because I remember when, you know, when people did get angry over Bush Leaguer, and we went, what have you thought you've been listening to this whole time? But
yeah,
but even with that discourse, you can still talk to them about the music. You know, they still have their, and they're probably even Flo fans, and that's fine, but it doesn't probably go too much deeper than that, is what I'm saying. but I mean, it is, I'm in a very red state. I'm in a little blue city in a very red state. And those bands I'm talking about, you know, Creedence and Seeger and everything, like that's our middle ground. I can always talk about that stuff. And the nice thing is like, yeah, you can avoid most of the stuff, just by bringing up music. Yeah. Especially, I mean, most people, they like to talk to me about music anyway. So, you know, it's kind of helpful.
Well, yeah. Speaking of talking to guys about music, you recently had Jeff and Stone on, and we'd love to know how you kind of came to meet those guys.
Yeah, how did I meet those guys? It's been a while now. So the first time I ever met them doesn't count, because the first time I met them, I snuck backstage in Cincinnati, and I met Mike, and I was with my friend.
2000?
Yeah. Yeah, it was 2000. And I was with my friend Shannon, and he's this huge. Like, so I'm 6'1", and he towers over me. And he's a big guy on top of that. And we decided to sneak backstage because it's an outdoor venue. And we see somebody coming, and we like decide we need to hide behind one of the semi wheels. But he's still.
But he is a semi wheel.
He's a semi wheel. So it's Mike's guitar tech, and I'm forgetting his name.
George?
George. No, not George.
What's George?
Long hair, rode the bike all the time. It's been a while.
Okay.
He sees us, and he looks, and he goes, can I help you guys? And we stand up, and, you know, we're young and everything. And he's laughing. He's laughing because he already knows what's going on. Us trying to hide behind a wheel. You know, and we're like, you just open to meet the guys or something, you know? And he goes, hang on here. Don't get caught. Don't be seen. That's what he said. Hang on here. Don't be seen. And he rides his bike back in. And before we know it, out comes Mike. And so we got to talk and everything and for a few. And he signed some stuff for us and joked about us trying to sneak backstage. We technically did get back. We just didn't get far. I don't think we could have gotten any further just by a stroke of luck. And then he politely escorts us back into the crowd.
Yeah.
at that time, I was pretty heavily into the forum on Pearl Jam's website.
Oh yeah.
And a few of the other ones like the Skyscrape and Five Horizons, I think, was going around that time. And meeting the community is, you know, you would caravan around to the shows. So I started meeting them, but that also meant I started meeting the Pearl Jam team. And so I got to know them a little bit through the years. And then once I was at FPK, I was able to finally come to them and say, hey, listen, I'm officially somewhere. And Mike was my first interview. In fact, I'm going to re-air that on his, because he's got a birthday coming up. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to re-air that. And we talked about that was when he was he announced the Mad Season reissue on that interview.
Right.
That's when that happened. And that there was extra tracks. And so that was my first viral interview because that got picked up. And then Stone was next. And I think it was a Brad interview. Mm-hmm. Because Brad was doing one of their last tours and they came through Louisville. And he came in and did a guest DJ session. And then Jeff was not long after that. And Mike, so I've only Mike was just that one time, but it for a while now, I'll either have Jeff or Stone on my show just about every year, because if they've got their side projects or there's an anniversary of some of the albums, and so I'll have them on. So I just became, you know, I got in the circle, the Pearl Jam circle of trust, the state of trust, if you will.
There you go.
Oh well, we love that you are in that circle. It is well deserved.
Yeah, and you know, it shows that you are a proper fan, because I mean the two interviews you did last year with Stone and Jeff, where you peppered them both with no code yield box set questions. I was like, this guy, he knows what's
what. I've been trying that, like, that's multiple times. That's not the first time I've done that with you. Like, because I've got those big, but you know, the ones that came out.
Yeah, so do we.
And I thought, I mean, I think we all thought, like,
it's just gonna, you
know,
keep going,
they'll at least do no code and yield. Like, they'll probably do it, you know, in the same way that they did versus Vitology. Especially, you know, you've got the Jack Irons set there, and that's my favorite. No code and yield. That's my favorite. That's my two right there. I'm the Jack Irons guy. Yeah, the fact that they haven't done it, and now Stone saying it's like, well, maybe we'll do a Lost Dogs too. And I feel like they probably, that's more likely now than getting one of those, because I'm sure those weren't cheap to create.
Well, they weren't cheap for us to buy.
You're right. You know what? I'll just be happy to hear what those vault songs of those two records are.
Yeah.
Because even the B-sides were, you know, fantastic.
Yeah, I wonder about that. Like, I wonder if they look at those, because aren't they, like, pretty notorious for, like, not wanting to look back too much?
Yeah.
You know? And so you get Lost Dogs, and there's a ton of stuff from the No Code through, like, Riot Act sessions.
It's a bit of a rough era, though, for them. I mean,
yeah. Well, personally, yes, of course.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm sure, because Jeff, I think, artistically had a lot to do with how that was all packaged, those reissues. So I think for him, it's like, well, you know, how deep of a dive do I want to go back into all of that? I don't know. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we just got to catch them in an off year. But now that they have this excitement of working with Andrew,
right?
Okay. I didn't think there was going to be one album in an entire decade, you know, with Lightning Bolt. It's like one.
Right.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. In LA, there's the only other thing you gave us. And, but yeah.
And they killed the holiday singles at the same time.
I know.
You take everything.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, it was always a joke anyway. You know, when's the holiday single come around? Yeah, probably by summer.
3 years.
March, June.
If you're lucky. But yet, now that they're with Andrew, I think there is a chance that we'll get quicker follow-ups, which also means that, you know, there's going to be even less chance for them to look back. But, and then Stone, I mean, you know, so now they do it. They've got this excitement, and Andrew's proven that they can make things quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a big thing.
Even though they sat on it for a long time.
Before Lightning Bolt, Stone was telling me, he's like, hey man, we're slowing down. You know, we're getting older. We're not going to do much anymore. It's going to be long. And now everybody's like, let's go back and do another record immediately. So
I love to hear that.
Yeah. And that's it. So I'm going to be releasing a Stone interview on release week, a new one. And that's one of the things that, you know, I brought up. It's like, you know, that the, there is this rekindled thing, it seems like. And he's like, yeah, I could see us very quickly getting back and making another record right after this. Now, whether that happens or not, that's always. But then again, they sat on this record for a while, even though they were telling me it's almost done. So we know, there's another record done. I don't know.
You know, how can you? I mean, I felt the frustration through the computer screen. I was watching those two interviews last year with Jeff and Stone, because, you know, one's hitting the gas and one's hitting the brake about, you know, what's possible, where the album's at, right. And then I think by the end of last year, everyone was kind of like, yeah, it's done, okay, yeah, it's done, and then it doesn't come out. I mean, I think they always wanted to save it for, I think marketing probably was like, hey, record store day, we can do all kinds of variants, we can license the shit out of it with March Madness or in the NHL playoffs, and like,
yeah,
all that stuff is probably what it was.
I mean, if you go back to early Pearl Jam, a lot of what they would say is, we want to release albums so we can go play live. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I wonder if part of the slowdown can be attributed to them saying, God, am I ready to spend all of next year on the road? You know, my daughters are doing this and my kids are doing that. And maybe the year after next is better. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they're, you know, thinking about the impact it's going to have being away from family and plotting when they want to drop records, even if the music's in the can. Like, the second you drop the album, the first question that everyone's going to ask is, when's the tour? You know, so.
But. And that's fair and probably true. I mean, when I talk to them these days, inevitably, outside of Jeff, we will talk about, you know, our kids. That comes from it. But, you know, it's like, take it from REM. You can release albums and not tour. They did that multiple times.
Beatles. How about the Beatles?
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. It's like we want that tour. We expect that tour. But you don't have to.
You know, I mean, also remember the economics of it. Like, you don't really make money from these records. You make money from being on the road.
Sure. Yeah. But then again, they've also got mailbox money coming in. So you're probably right about that, because even with the mailbox money, you know, it's not just the band. Like, they have people in the office to take care of. You know, they've got the crews to take care of. Did I just give a thumbs up?
It's a new operating system.
Yeah, I know.
Thing. Don't. It's a
But they, you know, when you think about all that, I said the same thing when, when Taylor Hawkins passed away. You know, there was some people that were like, oh, do you think that's it for the Foo Fighters? I was like, no, I think there's too many people to take care of. I think they'll have to keep going. I think they'll want to keep going, but I think they'll also have to keep going. And, you know, when you have an organization like that, that it's more than just the five guys in the band, you know, it's like, yeah, you do have to figure out how to pay those bills. So I'm sure the tour does mean something, but you know, and I know that the kids do as well.
Did you see, apparently I haven't read it yet myself. My issue is in the mail, but in that Mojo, magazine interview, Ed mentions one, maybe two more records. I don't know if that's in jest. I don't know how serious that was. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? Do you think that's, I mean, there's 60.
Yeah. I don't know.
Then again, Rolling Stones. So, Andrew,
I mean, how many bands have said that through the years? You know, it's just like, yeah. The fact that they've made it this long and they still like creating together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the music like it does.
Yeah. Like, U2 still going, the Stones are still going. Yeah. Again,
and U2 just did a residency at the Sphere in Vegas.
Yeah. Oh, I asked Stone about that too. I don't want to give that one away. I don't think they're going to do the Sphere, by the way.
I don't think so either. But
yeah,
the scuttlebutt with this new tour and possibly a giant LED screen are kind of out there.
I'll say this. Stone doesn't want to do the Sphere. But I'll leave it for my interview to figure out why.
Yes.
So there's a lot of details in that.
What day is that dropping, by the way?
What day is that dropping? Can I open up my calendar real quick?
Here? Absolutely. Yeah. I look shit up all the time on this show.
I say I have three interviews a week. Lately, I've had four interviews a week, so it's even more. The 17th, April 17th.
Okay. Oh, so 2 days before. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's a Wednesday. Okay, great. Well, everybody look out for that. And about when this comes out on April, I can't do math. Let me look at my calendar now. When does this come out? This comes out April 2nd. So 15 days from today, as this is released, look out for Stone talking to Kyle. And real quick before we let you go, Dark Matter running, your thoughts?
Like them quite a bit. You know, when I first heard, so I got to hear Dark Matter at in the office of the record label. I'd say their record label, Republic Records, which mm-hmm. sort of handles their stuff. A little bit before it was released, huge speakers. And my first thought was, oh, this is kind of the first time I would liken one of their later career songs to their earlier sound. And that day, I felt very Verses. I don't feel that way after I've heard it a bunch more, but I do feel like some of that fire from those early days was definitely in there. Running, I find to be a very fun song. Mm. Very fun song. I like Running a lot. Have you guys heard? Were you at the listening party? Have you heard the record? Okay.
No.
I didn't know if you guys did the whole thing in LA there. there's a song called Wreckage that it's sort of long way, you know, from Ed's solo record. Mm-hmm. Potential to be a hit, a real hit.
Really?
Like, right. It's really good.
You don't have to tell me, but there's been chatter that it's going to be a single.
I don't know if it's going to be a single. I would be very surprised if it's not a single. It should be a single. Okay. I know Stone and I talked about it. He talked about it like he knows like how good this is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really, really good. You know, and they've always had that. They've always done that, right? Like the big poppy song or whatever is really the first, you know, right. Oh, we're going to release Nothing As It Seems as the first single. Right. You know? To hell with Grievance and Insignificance. You know, that made that road so much easier for them. Like they've always done that. And, you know, Mind Your Manners. I'm still upset that Lightning Bolt, the title track, wasn't actually the single, because I think that was the finest song on that record.
I love that song. Paul disagrees.
Do you think In Hiding should have been a single? Off field?
In Hiding was a radio single, little known. There is a promo disc out there. It's hard to find and probably cost a pretty penny. But In Hiding was a radio single. But yes, In Hiding should have been the follow-up single to Given to Fly.
Can you explain what that means? Like, not a proper single, but it was a radio single. What's the difference?
Well, a proper single would have been like, you know, how you can buy them. We can buy the singles. Okay. Like, I have the Given to Fly single back. I mean, I have all the singles back here. But like, you could buy it in the store. So that's a proper single. Okay. But sometimes the record label, you know, they might think, well, we're not going to press that one up. You know, it's that much to go into stores, because for a band like Pearl Jam, you'd have to press up thousands of them, and then maybe they'll sell and maybe they won't to make the money back. But we'll press up a promo disc, send it to the 150 radio stations, so we only have to press up 200, you know. No money lost there. They're pressing up promo discs all the time. And then if it blows up, then we'll put it out as a real single. But they never did a real push on it. They didn't do a real push on Do the Evolution, even though the video was actually being played, you know. That was an official single out there. But yeah, because the only two that got pressed up in stores that became official single was that Wish List, Given to Fly Wish List. Right.
Yeah.
So Do the Evolution and In Hiding were unofficial singles.
Interesting.
Sort of like Better Man. Better Man was an unofficial single. Black was an unofficial single. They went to radio.
Yeah.
So I think Wreckage is going to be a big song for them this year. The fact that Dark Matter is their first number one song at rock and alternative on Billboard.
We talked about that.
20 years. Yeah. Like, that's, it's already set up.
Amazing.
Like, that was the harder gets. So the fact that they've got Wreckage in their pocket.
Yeah.
And got to give, you know, that's very Who feeling song. Reminds me of the Who. There's Cure moments. That's a big part of my interview with Stone too. Like, I don't think people understand how much of this record was actually influenced by the Cure.
Interesting.
Oh.
Yeah. So
nice. Okay.
That's in there as well. But I'll also say, when you get to Upper Hand and you get to hear that, it's a journey. It's a journey.
Well, listen, when all I heard Waiting for Stevie is like singles era, I was like, all right. Okay. You had me there. You had me.
Right. Yeah.
I couldn't be more excited.
It's a very fun record. In my interview with Stone, I used the wrong words, because I said it's a very bright record. And then he goes, what do you mean? I said, you know, happy. It's not a happy record. No, it's not. But it is in this heaviness that they are, you know, producing this time around, as you hear with those first two singles. It's still a fun record in a way that I haven't heard since Backspacer. This record lives in an unofficial trilogy to me of Yield and Backspacer.
Hmm.
Oh. And now Dark Matter. That's how I feel about where this one lives in their discography.
Well, we will challenge our listeners to play those in order. Maybe they'll sync up with Star Wars episodes 1 through 3. Jar Jar Binks comes
who's,
in.
Who's going to sync up with you on the road? Are you hitting any of these shows?
I'll be in Indy. I was supposed to be the, you know, Matt got COVID last year, so we were going to drive up for that. And so I will be back on that one. I usually try to hit 2 or 3, and it, you know, really just depends on my own calendar and where I am in the country at the time. But I'm sure I'll be probably at least at a couple of them, but you know, we'll see, maybe even more, but, but at least Indy. I'll definitely be an Indy.
Anybody else coming up besides Stone on the old with Kyle Meredith?
Oh, look at that. I've got the calendar here.
Look at this.
Let me see here. Cause you said this is coming out
on April 2nd.
This is coming out on April 2nd. So I'll have just published my Gary Clark Jr. interview.
Oh man.
Gary and I go way back. Yeah, we go way, way back. Gary's great. And his new record's great. I got some good actors coming up. Hamish Linklater, Nathan Stewart Jarrett, George MacKay. Guy Garvey from Elbow is on the show.
Oh,
nice. Maggie Lindemann, she's a bit heavier alt. Beth Ditto from Gossip, she's on. The English Beat will come right after Pearl Jam. I thought that was a nice, you know, we'll save it for later callback there. For, you know, deep stuff. Waxahachie, Shinedown, Maya Hawke, Thompson Twins. Yeah, it goes on.
There's, you cover all the bases, Kyle.
Yeah.
Every corner of the musical world, you're ticking it off. You're
That's fun. It's fun to check. Got to collect them all. You know, they're just a whole bunch of Pokemon out there.
I was just going to say musical Pokemon. Well, dude, I it's late where you are, and I appreciate you staying up with us and chatting about you and Pearl Jam.
It's the easiest thing to chat about in the world.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we'll let you go, and don't forget Kyle Meredith with. You can listen to that on Apple Music, Spotify, on his YouTube channel. Over 900 episodes. Go back in time, listen, watch them all. And WFPK in Louisville, if you're in the area.
WFPK.
WFPK.
And you can listen, stream us worldwide on that one. I do. That's my true. Show is every weeknight at 6 p.m. Eastern. So you can dive in, and I have some bonus interviews on there. And of course, there's usually Pearl Jam on every show. There's David Bowie on every show, and REM on almost every show, and the Counting Crows on almost every show. So, and then there's a
Stephen Sanchez song, by the way.
That's Stephen Sanchez, right? Yeah.
Great song.
I'm playing that one too. Yeah. So that's WFPK at 6 p.m. Eastern. I'm so grateful you guys asked me to be on here. Like I said, I'm such a fan of this podcast, and it's really been enjoyable. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure having you,
Kyle. Thank you, Kyle. Talk to you soon, man. Once again, big thank you to Kyle for coming on the show. He stayed up late. He's on the East Coast. We're on the West Coast. So
very grateful for his time.
Tip of the cap to Kyle. So yeah, once again, big interview with Stone Gosser coming out in 15 days time. August. Oh my God. April 17th. Mm-hmm. Check him out on Apple Music, Spotify, or his YouTube channel. You get to see Stone's beautiful face in person, as is Kyle's. And yeah, we're getting stoked for Dark Matter, guys. And it was a lot of fun to get to know Kyle better, and looking forward to more content from him.
Absolutely. It's you know, we talk a lot about this genuine authenticity, you know, and Kyle exudes that. He's very much himself. And I think that, you know, the things he talked about in terms of, you know, asking questions that are open-ended, right? I mean, his process, things like that. It's great to see that stuff in practice, but more than anything else, I think a lot of it stems from just the quality person that he is. And, you know, that really comes out, and, you know, people, no matter how hard you try to do it, you know, at the end of the day, people ultimately show you who they are. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think, in the amount of time that we were, lucky to have with Kyle here, he certainly showed that he's the type of person that it's easy to open up to, easy to talk to. And so I just had a blast chatting Pearl Jam with him, chatting music with him. And I could see why the guys enjoy coming on and chatting process with him as well. So check it out, guys. You know, you're listening here. Definitely go pop in and catch all the upcoming Pearl Jam goodies with Kyle Meredith.
That's right. Kyle Meredith With is the name of the podcast. And if you're in the greater Louisville area, go check him out on WFPK or check him out online anywhere. Mm-hmm. I was listening to his show just a couple days ago online. So there it is, guys. We appreciate you popping on with us again for another week. I said at the top of the show, if you're interested in more content, we do have a Patreon. We do have giveaways, Dark Matter, the vinyl, this month's giveaway.
Stickers. So
check that link out. We got stickers as well.
Pants.
And pins and other things we could shill. T-shirts, which are very cool. But more importantly, if you could just go ahead and like, subscribe, and hit the bell. And then, Paul, of course, if you're a listener that does audio only and doesn't want to look at our faces, what do?
You feed that algorithm. Rate, review, subscribe. Tell us what you think. And if you don't like us, give us reasons to be better.
Constructively, please.
Constructively.
We want to grow. Not melt into the floor. All right. That's enough from us this week. We'll see you here next week. And until we do, you've been listening to
The State of Love and Trust.